Hello, hello, and welcome back to Art House Garage, the snob-free film podcast where we make art house, indie, classic, and foreign cinema accessible to the masses. I'm your host, Andrew Sweatman, and this is episode 38 of the podcast. We are two episodes into season 6, which is looking at the best films of 2020. This season is all about the award contenders, the buzzy films, the best of the year that might be winning some trophies in the coming months. Today's film actually had its festival release back in 2019, but it did not hit theaters until January 2020. That seems so long ago now. Remember January? Remember movie theaters? Remember pre-COVID life? Enough about that. Today's film is The Assistant, directed by Kitty Green and starring Julia Garner. It's a fascinating film, very minimal in its style, but very heavy in its subject matter. Julia plays Jane, who works as an assistant for a movie studio. As the story unfolds, she begins to realize that her boss, a powerful movie executive, is sexually abusing women. This story may sound familiar if you followed the news for the last few years. It does parallel real life, but the film's focus is on Jane. What should she do in this situation? How does she handle this? How many other people at her workplace know this is going on? It's emotionally intense and it's incredibly thought-provoking, not to mention very well acted and directed. Joining me for this conversation is my friend Sophie Barnes. Sophie is a filmmaker here in Arkansas and has directed a number of short films as well as acting, producing, you name it. She's very talented at what she does and she's full of thoughts and insights when it comes to discussing films and filmmaking. Thank you so much for being here, Sophie.
Of course. Hello.
Before we get into The Assistant, let's talk about what you've got going on right now. I recently saw you in a short film called A Lullaby, directed by Claire Barnett. And I actually talked about that a little bit on IGTV, so you can I'll link that in the show notes and kind of my reaction to that. I really like that film, and I think you are wonderful in it. So thank you for that. But what else? Or what's the status of that? Is that still going through festivals? And then what else do you have going on right now?
Yeah. I did act in Claire's film earlier, I guess, last year. That's still going through festivals. She's got some high hopes for it. We've all got high hopes for it. So hopefully that will kind of move through and we'll see new screenings popping up.
Yes.
But I'm actually acting in her next film, which is called Moth. And that is, it's still through UCA. Lullaby was a UCA production film, and Moth will be her senior thesis film. So it's about a woman who is going into labor, and she essentially enters an elevator without her partner, who is joining her for the whole ordeal, and starts to freak out, and then the elevator like shuts down. Oh, no. And she's stuck in the elevator giving birth essentially. Oh, my gosh. And then she's kind of visited by some women from her past, her sister, her mother, and her grandmother. And it's still in development, so this isn't like confirmed everything that's going to happen, but that's sort of the log line.
We've got the inside scoop.
I don't know if like, hopefully Claire's not like, oh, so why'd you do that?
I can run this by her first if you want.
But I think it'll be fine. So that's kind of like in the works. And so we'll shoot that next spring, with like all the COVID, like guidelines and everything. But we're excited.
Well, that sounds fascinating. So with Lullaby, it seems pretty straightforward. And then it kind of goes to that place that's a little like metaphysical or something outside of, strictly reality starts happening. And that's always a little bit surprising, but fun. So this sounds like maybe kind of along the same lines.
It absolutely is. So that's if great. You liked that part of Lullaby, and whoever watches this, if you like, Claire's kind of direction, Lullaby, you'll definitely like what she has planned for Moth for sure.
That's great.
And then other than that, I don't really have much going on other than working and just like writing. And I guess I've been an actress since I was a kid in whatever sense, but I've also been a writer director since that time as well. And so I went to school like to make movies, not just act in them, but to make them. So Yeah, I have several films that are still sort of showing in different places, mainly in the state. I'm also working on another feature by my friend David Cruz, who also had a film at Filmland. My boyfriend is the producer, so we're working on it sort of together. He's the main producer, and then he's just like, "So, can you do this?" And I'm like, "Sure, why not?" So I'm just sort of like, I guess I'm a PA in a sense, like an office assistant kind of, but yeah, I'm just enjoying my downtime after school for sure.
Well, that's cool. That's my sense of the UCA kind of film world, is that everyone's collaborating and helping each other out, and it seems like a really kind of a healthy space for creative outlets there.
I would agree with that for sure.
Well, cool. I'll link to all the details I can for all those in the show notes so everyone can be involved. And then as new things happen, I'll post them on Art House Garage Facebook as well. But yeah, I guess let's move on and talk about The Assistant.
Welcome. Have a seat. Whatever's going on, you can tell me. That's what I'm here for. You're relatively new to the company.
I mean, I've been working here for nearly 2 months.
And you're under a lot of stress. Entry-level jobs in this industry are tough, right? Long hours. First one in, last one out.
Good night.
You're smart. You have to be smart. It's a tough job, but I can see that you've got what it takes.
I want those new pages before I get on the plane.
He promised the first thing.
Where are we at?
200K in 2 points.
That's bull.
Maybe he can put in a good word for you.
No, he'll hire externally.
Listen, his schedule has shifted. Does 7 p.m. work?
Still at the hotel, or?
Yes. What?
This is turkey. I said chicken.
There's a girl waiting.
Oh, her. She's been here before. A few times.
What is it?
The wife. Say he's in an important meeting.
No, say he's in the screening.
Where is he?
What did you say to him? What did you say? They told me you were smart.
I overreacted.
It was not my place to question your decision. I will not let you down again.
You know, you can always come to us, right? Come to us first, okay?
All right, let's talk about The Assistant. So this is a film from director Kitty Green. It tells the story of a young woman named Jane, played by Julia Garner, who works as an assistant for a film production company in New York. And over the course of the film, she becomes aware that her boss is sexually abusing women. And so this parallels some real-life high-profile sexual abuse cases in Hollywood from the last few years. So it's very timely in that sense. And the film also explores kind of just like what a day in the life looks like for Jane, and then the moral dilemma that she kind of finds herself in as she discovers this. There's a number of interesting kind of filmmaking choices made here, and I want to get into all those. But I think the first thing I want to ask you, Sophie, since you, as a filmmaker in many areas, but as an actor, that the performance is really key to this. So I wanted to see, how familiar are you with Julia Garner elsewhere? And then what did you think of her performance here?
Yeah, I'm super familiar with Julia Garner. Maybe not like uber like obsessive fan level, but she did a film in 2012 called Electric Children, by Rebecca Thomas, I think is her name, yes, Rebecca Thomas. And she actually went to grad school with one of the professors at UCA, Jennifer Gerber, who also has made several feature or a feature in the state, and she's working on another one. But Rebecca Thomas got to visit school, like UCA, before I even got there. And I found out like when I got there, and I was like, oh my God, like, are you kidding me? Electric Children was my favorite movie for years and years. I mean, I still kind of put it up there. I wouldn't like say it's my favorite right now, because there's stuff that's kind of moved in the space. But Julia Garner has like always been one of my, I don't know, favorite young actresses.
Yeah,
like I like she, in Electric Children, I specifically like attached myself, or like kind of, maybe not attached myself, but like,
yeah, start kind of paying
resonated.
Attention.
Yeah. Yeah. Resonated with several things that she did, like several little choices she made, and then aspects of the plot. And like Electric Children's about a girl who is in, she lives in a like a commune, I guess, sort of, but it's like a Mormon camp or commune. She like does her first confession, and then she wants to hear the sound of her voice on the tape that was recorded for a confession. So she goes into this basement and finds this tape and listens to herself, but then she finds this other tape and it's blue, and it's like the only one that's blue, and she puts it in and listens to it, and it's this rock song, and she thinks it like impregnates her, and so then she goes, or like whatever, it's wow. like all this whole thing, and Rory Culkin's in it. Anyway,
wow.
long story short, I love Julie Garner, have always loved her, and this is definitely different. The assistant performance is different from the Electric Children performance. I thought she did a great job. I was like, I wasn't disappointed in any way. Like there was no disappointment at the end as the credits rolled. There was no disappointment with the performance. It was just kind of, you know, it's one that I need to watch more and more, because it's a subtle performance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll let you kind of say something about that.
Yeah, I agree. I think the performance and a lot of things about this movie are really minimal and subtle and kind of understated. Well, first of all, Electric Children sounds fascinating. You mentioned it the other day when we were just messaging, and I kind of glanced at it. But yeah, I love stories that are kind of like set in kind of extreme religious situations. So that sounds really mm-hmm. interesting. And then where I know her from primarily is the show Ozark. And it's interesting because she has like a really thick Southern accent in that. That's not her normal accent. And I knew that, but it's just jarring to hear her and hear it using, you know, her regular voice, I presume. But then I look back at her filmography, and I've seen her in a lot of different things as like minor characters, I guess. And she's in Perks of Being a Wallflower, which I don't remember who she is in that, but I've seen that, and so I need to go back and look. She is in a miniseries called Maniac as well that I've seen most of. I haven't finished it yet, but yeah, so she's kind of been in a lot of different things. But yeah, I thought the performance here was really good. I think it is, as you said, subtle. There's a few moments that kind of stood out to me as like, wow, she's doing a lot here, but it's, and using it kind of within that framework of subtlety, maybe like the moment I think about. So she's tasked with speaking to the boss's wife on the phone a couple of times, mostly because she's a woman, and we'll kind of talk about that part of it too, I think. But
yeah,
after the second one, she, you know, she says, I'm not going to lie to her, and so she kind of is honest and is like, I don't know where he is, etc. But then after she hangs up, like the moment she hangs up, and it just lingers on her while she's kind of processing everything that she just experienced, and you can tell she's like dreading the aftermath of this. Like, he's going to be furious. She's feeling a lot of anxiety. Like, she thinks she did the right thing, but she's not sure. Mm-hmm. And you can just kind of feel a lot of that just under the surface as she's just sitting at her desk, like stunned and worried. So I think that was a good moment. And then also the ending, which I think we can, there's not really a ton to spoil or not spoil about this movie, but maybe we can withhold just like whether she's able to make a big difference, you know, kind of where this ends up. But I think in the end, she's sitting in a deli by herself, and she's been kind of just working really hard all day. And she's been like good posture, upright, just doing her job. And then she kind of crumples on this table, and she kind of leans over, and you just kind of finally see her like sort of be herself, I guess, and kind of let her guard down. And obviously she
starts to almost fall asleep.
Yeah. You can tell she's so tired. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause she, I mean, this film starts at like 4:30 in the morning or something. It's not clear what she's getting, like an Uber or something from her house. And it's way before the crack of dawn.
Right.
So yeah, I did think it was a really good performance, and I'm excited to see, you know, it could follow her career as she continues to act, because I think she's very talented.
Yeah, and she's won. She didn't win the Emmy this year, but she did win it last year, like we said.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, when that happened, I was like, "Heck yes, Julia! Like, yes, ma'am," because I've been a fan of her for so long.
Yeah, man, she's great.
Yeah, she's great.
So speaking of kind of the subtlety and understatedness of it, I want to kind of talk about the style of the movie. It is really minimal and understated, but you can tell it's incredibly intentional, the things that are, you know, included and things that are not included. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the style of this. For one thing, like the camera, I think it moves a few times, but I was mm-hmm. kind of halfway through it and I was like, I think the camera's been stationary almost this whole time. So it's mm-hmm. it's kind of, I don't know, it feels kind of modern. That's a weird word to say maybe, but like the office set design is just kind of a modern office. But the camera, yes, is still, there's some really unnerving angles where it's kind of looking down at her, like almost a paranoid kind of feeling, I think. There's some shots where she's like alone in the frame and she's kind of small in the frame. And I think that kind of points to how alone she feels in this situation, kind of the isolation of this. I think isolation is a word I would use to describe the feeling of this movie. Because I think she's on screen almost the entire film and right. she's alone physically and then definitely emotionally for pretty much the whole thing. But
yeah.
What else do you think about the style of it? Go ahead.
Well, so yes, it's a super static film, which is like something you notice with a film immediately, especially if you're starting to feel a little claustrophobic because of that, which is not necessarily how I felt. But I made a film like 2 years ago that was super static, and people were like, oh man, I wish you'd gotten more movement. I wish you'd gotten this. And I was like, no, the point was to be static. Like the point was to be blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I loved the static, like dolly kind of, like if there was any movement, I feel like it was just dolly stuff. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
And I'm a fan of that. And that kind of reminds me of Chantal Ackerman's work from, like the 60s, 70s, 80s, particularly Jean Dimon, which I love that movie. And it's, you know, certainly The Assistant is kind of in that realm because a lot of it is just her doing her work, doing what she's supposed to be doing at her job, rather than trying to, like, half of the movie is that, and then half the movie is trying to tell the story of what she's discovering. Mm-hmm. But there's like a good, whatever, like 30, 35 minutes of her just at work, just doing what she does. And seeing her trying to keep a happy face and kind of going back to the performance aspect. I think Julia Garner does a terrific job of showing just what it feels like to be at a dream job that's kind of disappointing. It's not giving you everything you hoped it would. Mm-hmm. Like, she's gotten this job that, like, he's the chairman. Like, she's pretty up there in terms of who she's assisting, although she's still an assistant, and she's going around and she's talking to people all day and she's closest to his office and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But she's still like, she's being berated. She's being condescended to and talked down to by her coworkers. Mm-hmm. The interactions with higher ups are less than okay. They're less than pleasing. Mm-hmm. I kind of resonate with that, sort of like the dry tone in a way. Cause it was dry in the sense that it's trying to give you just what's happening. Mm-hmm. But I do think it kind of, so it certainly leans toward her side and toward kind of what this film is a little more biased towards, which is like we don't see the actual events of any sexual abuse. We just see what people are encountering on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like static and just like kind of the misery stationary or static films, Chantal Ackerman comes to mind, and then I honestly kind of got some Edward Hopper vibes. Like there's a painting, and I don't know exactly what it's called, but it's in a movie theater, and it's a woman just like off to the side, like leaning on the side of the wall, like out, like right behind the curtain to enter into the movie theater. and it's really cool because she's on the, like, she's on the really hard right side of the frame. Mm-hmm. And that actually happens in the film. There's a part, I think it's when she's waiting for the elevator at some point, mm-hmm. and she's like hard right on the right side of the frame. And I was like, oh, Edward Hopper. That's an Edward Hopper. That's totally an Edward Hopper reference.
That's so cool.
Yeah. I loved the static, though. I loved that choice to be static. I don't know that it would have worked if it were like David Lynch, like, movement, you know? Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know that that would have, it would have been a totally, it would have worked in a totally different way, but just not the way that it worked in this particular iteration.
Yeah, I totally agree. First of all, that Chantal Ackerman is a filmmaker that it's been a big blind spot for me. And after I've been kind of looking, like, what should I kind of marathon through next, that she's been on my list, is another point in favor of me finally catching up with some,
yes,
of those films. But yeah, as far as that static that you're talking about, that the most recent film that I can remember that was static in this way is First Reformed, the movie from a few years ago with Ethan,
yes,
Hawke. And the camera's really still through the whole thing. There's a few notable exceptions to that. But as listening to, like, podcasts that year when it was coming out, the director, Paul Schrader, talked about, and I've talked about this on a previous episode too, but like the transcendental style is kind of what he's all about. But he talks about using even boredom as a tool to, like, almost lull the audience, or, I don't know, kind of get them into a certain headspace before you show them something else, which I think maybe this is kind of doing a similar thing. I think it's kind of like mundane for the first little bit. Like you mentioned, it's just showing her doing her job for a long time. And I think that, like, to the point that I was like, okay, when are we going to find out about her boss? Cause like, once mm-hmm. you meet the boss character, sort of, like, you know, we don't ever see him, which is another interesting choice that I think
we see him.
Yeah.
I think we do. Like, I watched it again today, and I think one of the guys, like, when she's picking up the pastry and she puts it in her mouth, I think one of those guys is her boss.
So there's, like, a flash. Flash of his face.
Yes. It's just him, like, or it's just him, like, looking at her, and you don't, like, I think the key there is that you don't know who those people are, and you
don't know
that that's
yet.
Her boss, but I'm pretty sure that's her boss.
Wow, interesting.
Because I think I saw his outfit, like, walking in the room, mm-hmm. in his meeting room or his office at one point. Anyway, but I think it's just, like, that one time. But it's so nondescript. I love that.
Yeah, he's, like, an off-screen kind of movie monster almost. Like, I think about, like, monster movies where you don't see the creature for a long time. It kind of had that vibe, like, am I sure we're going to see him? Maybe not. But, yeah, and just that kind of mundaneness, I think. So one other thing about the style is the color palette. I think it's pretty, like, muted and kind of, it's like, there's a very little, it's like kind of cold, I guess, almost like it's pulled the natural color out of things,
mm-hmm.
which I think kind of that and the sort of the mundanity is almost like highlighting that this is like business as usual. Like, this is just another boring day at a boring job. And
mm-hmm.
yet something so sinister is right below the surface. And it's kind of just, I think, highlighting how undetected stuff like this can go. So I thought that was a good choice as well. And so that kind of segues
into
go ahead.
For sure. Sorry.
Yeah, no, you're fine.
I love the color choice, and I'm a fan of like just sucking all of the saturation out of it, out of a piece. And that's what happens, like, tonally, but also, like, with the color as well.
Yeah, like, it wouldn't make sense for this to have, like, a lot of warm, pretty colors, because, you know, it would be really bizarre. And so, yeah, I think it just makes sense. And it's, I think a nice touch. And that kind of leads into, so we can kind of talk about the abuse and sort of actually just, like, the feminism of this film, because I think it's, so there's kind of the one big obvious thing, like, this is sexual abuse and we need to stop it. But then I think there's some other kind of subtle things too. But I want to see your reaction. What did you think of this, like, as a feminist work? Did that work on that level for you?
I thought it did. You know, part of me wouldn't be surprised if this character of Jane was, like, a little less feminist before this moment. I don't know.
Like,
I'm thinking for myself, trying to put myself into Jane's shoes, and thinking about if I were at this job or whatever, I know for a fact I would be, I would act the exact same way that she mm-hmm. does, aiming to please. Mm-hmm. Part of her, like in certain circumstances, is like, okay, F off. Like, I don't want to deal with these people. I don't want to deal with you. Like, you know, let me do my job. And then part of her is like, okay, why am I getting a little bit different treatment? Mm-hmm. Just, I mean, she's been there for 5 weeks, and I kind of understood. I know that she's being treated in whatever way because she's new, but there's also this kind of part where she's smaller and she can kind of be taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. So I think the Jane sort of as the representative of like the feminist kind of goals of this film. Mm-hmm. I felt like she was a nice representation, but something lacked for me, maybe.
Okay.
In terms of like the feminist voice or the sort of like progressive voice or whatever from this piece, like maybe it was just like how static and cold it was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm just like I'm very attached to like exciting, full of movement, like mm-hmm. colorful, emotional, nostalgic pieces, and this wasn't that at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so maybe that's sort of my like my own like personal interpretation, but I don't know that the like feminism in the film like fully mm-hmm. satisfied me.
Sure.
But I did love, and I think this is maybe what you're getting at, but I loved the little moments where Jane had interactions with men mm-hmm. or women in the office, and you could see differences between who treated her how and why mm-hmm. and when and all of that stuff. Like her interactions with the kind of scrawnier, honestly more annoying, like both of the other assistants uh-huh. were so annoying to me. Like I, yeah. Oh my Lord in heaven. And I think that's effective. Like, I know that that was the goal. Like that was mm-hmm. the goal, was for them to be just so obnoxious. Yeah. And like when she's on the phone with the wife, she does absolutely nothing wrong. She's mm-hmm. just trying to get this woman to shut up and get off the phone because she doesn't know how to help her. Mm-hmm. And then the other, she's like typing her apology and the guy's like, and you need to add this, this, and this. And I'm like, but she doesn't even need to apologize in the first place. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. she's so ridiculous.
Yes.
But like their interactions with her and like the guy with the headpiece, like, can you take this? Like, you need to take this because mm-hmm. you're a woman and you need to handle this. I'm like, oh,
literally like throws
God.
A piece of paper at her to like get her attention.
He's
so mad.
It's
like, oh my gosh,
what the
guy's
Lord.
The worst. Yeah.
He's so bad. And just like the big, like the hefty, like pat on the back that mm-hmm. the one who sits next to her gives her whenever she's typing that response. And then he does it again, or he doesn't do the pat on the back again, but he like helps her with her email again, mm-hmm. helps in quotation mark. Mm-hmm. If we're like referencing that in terms of like the feminist, like sort of not agenda, but like the, like what's going on in terms of feminism in this movie, I think that was more one of the truer, interactions or like mm-hmm. truer things that I saw in the film that like I felt like I've experienced like mm-hmm. dudes saying just really dumb things and I'm like, okay, like just go just go about your business, I'm perfectly competent, I can do what I need to do.
I love all that, and that totally makes sense. And I wanted to hear what you had to say, because I mean, I've never been a woman in an office environment, but I have witnessed sexism in an office environment before. But yeah, I think that all totally makes sense. I definitely had that sense of like boys club kind of vibes, especially with those mm-hmm. two assistants, but then her few interactions with the executives and stuff too. It's clear. And then she's also kind of delegated to like the quote unquote, like traditionally feminine things, like cleaning up, doing the dishes. Mm-hmm. She has to like babysit at one point, which it's like, mm-hmm. there's no reason. She has to be the one talking to the wife, and they just kind of stick her with these things. And yeah, I think it, you can kind of say, oh, it's because she's the newest and she doesn't have seniority or something, but she's also the only female there. And it just seems like that has to be part of it. But yeah, and that kind of gets to like, so looking at the whole system of abuse, I think if you've learned anything about kind of how these things work in the last few years, as they've all been coming out in the news and things, it's like there's a system in place. Like, it doesn't happen in a vacuum. And that's why once she discovers it, it's like, what do I even do? It's like, and I think like the emotional moments in this, like the shocking moments in this, are all when she's interacting with someone, it's not clear whether they know or not about what's going on. And then there's like a moment when it's like, okay, they know and they're not doing anything. And that, I won't spoil how many times that happens, but,
right. Yeah.
But there are a few moments that are like that. And, so like when she first finds out, she immediately goes to the HR, which that scene is fascinating. One of my favorite scenes, probably not because of what happens. It's infuriating, but it's, I think the performance of the HR guy, which I can't remember that actor's name right now, but
Matthew McFadden.
Yes, that's him. He's so interesting. Because he seems, you know, like he's kind and going to listen, and then it just goes very downhill. And
I actually thought he was gonna, play the executive when I, like, because I had no clue about any of the, like, I didn't watch the trailer or anything, so I was like going into the movie thinking he was going to be like a big part of the movie, and I was like, I was super, like, I was happy with what I, you know, what it gave me in terms of his performance. I just totally came in thinking like it was going to be like Julie Garner, Matthew McFadden movie, and it wasn't. That HR scene reminds me a lot. In college, I did student government, and I had like, I was an executive vice president, like for, I was elected in the spring and then I served throughout the summer, and I was supposed to serve like the entire year. And some people just did not want me to be in the job anymore. Like lots of people, and not lots of people that were like my friends. They were people who like were all like, they were like all similar in terms of their ideals, their values, like they all were in the same organizations outside of SGA. And like, it was all like led by the president, who was like my, I worked closest with him because I was his vice president. So I was like doing things in conjunction with him. And he was like leading this crew of people who like wanted to remove me from my position. And I went to talk to like an advisor about the whole situation, and they didn't act like the HR guy in this movie, but they did act like him in they didn't treat me the way that he treats Julia, or Jane rather. But they kind of were like, well, I mean, it's like you have all this quote unquote evidence, but what level of evidence is it? It's not really evidence against anything. And it's totally a different situation. But it's like, it reminds me of just like that horrible feeling of knowing that there's something wrong. There's something wrong with the situation you're in, and you could easily, attempt to convince every last person you see about that, but then at the end of the day, does it really matter? Because people aren't gonna value your experience the way that you are valuing the negative experiences that you've had. It's terrible. It's infuriating and it's traumatizing and all of that. And so I wish I part of me, like, I'm not a happy ending kind of person for a movie. Like I don't care about happy endings, but part of me really just wanted, and I guess we did get that because Jane, the fourth assistant, the one who comes in from Idaho, they sort of have a moment where she's like, okay, we're gonna see each other tomorrow, and she's like, yeah. And so it's almost like she has a teammate now, but that teammate is also like, she's just in the throes of all of this because she's now part of the abuse that's happening. Just like Jane essentially is, just by being like adjacent to all this information and everything that's happening.
Yeah. That's all fascinating. Well, first of all, thanks for sharing that personal story, that kind of really ties in, and that's really interesting. But yeah, I think you're right. That's another level of this, is like, now that she knows, and like, what does she do about it? Is she complicit by still working there? And, you know, how much are we, you know, if we're a small cog in a big machine, how much are we, you know, responsible for the sins of an organization? That's a question I've asked myself in the past, even in like silly ways of like, I worked at a fast food restaurant and I thought, you know, am I like killing people by handing them their food, like slowly,
right.
You know, like, yeah. How much should I worry about that? And other jobs too, in more serious ways, I've had that kind of feeling too. So this kind of hit home in that way of like, what would you do in this situation? Like, the, you know, this mm-hmm. is a quote unquote good job for her. And her dad even says like, it's a great opportunity. But as you said, she's obviously disappointed with how it's going, and then becomes horrific in this day in her life. But yeah, I didn't even think about that as far as the, you know, I'll see you tomorrow situation with that other coworker. So yeah, it is, I guess there's a glimmer of hope of like, they're in this together in some way, and like, maybe they're going to be able to continue to do something. But yeah.
But they also might just be stuck. They might be just sort of like in a cage together. Mm. Like they're, it's just like she got a cellmate kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to be treated the same way. If not, the new girl will be treated in a different way than Jane is treated, right. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to be happy times for her. She's going to be harassed, in different ways than Jane is harassed, mm-hmm. And abused in different ways than Jane is abused. And so it's like, it's almost like those two are like a dichotomy of mm-hmm. women in, like male dominated workforces, mm-hmm. like, I guess sort of like the more desirable one versus the,
right, yeah.
The like not more hardworking one, but the kind of,
yeah. I mean, it's reminded me of that, the horrifying line when someone says, don't worry, you're not his type. Like,
yes.
Ugh,
yes. I've like, been thinking about that a lot.
That's probably the moment in the movie when I was like, oh my gosh, like my heart just sinks, you know? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And so she's like, oh, cool. I, you know, love that. I love to hear that I'm not someone's. And then it's like, there's so many different, like, there's like, at least there's two different kind of takeaways from that line that you're not his type. Oh, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to be sexually abused by my boss because he's not attracted to me. And that makes me, how do I feel about that? Do I feel bad about that? Or do I feel good about that? Like, do I feel bad or good about my boss not wanting to, like assault me? Yeah. How do I feel about that?
Yeah.
You know, like it's, and that's definitely like, I think the complexity of a lot of these situations are like the strong suit of this film. Like I think that's, you know, that's where this film really, really gets you, is in those little tiny moments and those small looks or those small gestures, those small lines that, when you leave the film, you're like, okay, what did I just watch? You go back through cataloging what you saw, and those tiny little moments stand out and start to add up to this like stomach churning, horrifying like experience, especially if you think about it a lot. I think this is a thinker.
For sure.
This film is a thinker as opposed to a watcher and Lieber. I don't know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. There's those things that stick with you. So there's that moment. So yeah, also the implication that like the person who says that line about you're not his type, like that he thinks that's the point, you know, like that's the most important thing right now, is whether or not this person's going to be abused by the abuser you're helping keep in power. It's such a mess. But then there's also a line. So there's a few moments, which I think is really strong, where there's kind of like an unspoken, like they both know that the other knows, but they're not going to say it. So there's like a feeling of that in the elevator towards the end. And then the line, if someone says, don't worry, it's going to be, I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's going to be better for her than it is for him in the long run, or something like that. Like, she's going to get ahead in her career is the implication. And
like, she's going to get more out of it. Yeah.
Right. That's what it was. Yeah. She's going to get more out of it than he will. Yeah. And also, like, kind of going back to the HR thing and even your experience, that this film, I think, demonstrates the importance of, like, that whole idea of believe women, like, because his whole argument is like, well, no one's gonna believe you, so what's the point? So I think it really that hit home, as well as, like, this is why it's important that we have to take people at their word with stuff. But anyway, mm-hmm. I think we've said a lot about this movie. Do you have anything else you want to add before we kind of wrap it up?
Honestly, just that, like, you know, I love the framing of this film. Like, I love mm-hmm. not like the physical framing of, like, how it's framed, but, like, how we start out with her alone and we end with her alone. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of New York stuff. Yeah. Beginning and end, and the whole film is very deeply New York, because people aren't super nice in it, and it's cold, and, you know, all this stuff, which is not all what New York is, but it's a lot about what we hear about New York. Mm. And it's not an entirely untrue, like, portrait of what the city is like and what it's like to work there, which I don't have the experience, but I do have the kind of, like, Adjacent experience of having visited and been like, okay, if I stepped into a working woman's shoes in this city, how would I feel? And it's not the best feeling, especially for someone who's really grinding, like Jane is in this film. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's kind of, like, I loved that it was, like, truthful about the harshness of not just the company and the experience it within this, like, microcosm of the whole, like, just the facility itself, and then the people she's around and the situation she's experiencing, but also just, like, the city itself. Mm-hmm. The shots we get of the city are very, like, high production, like, you know, bridges and mm-hmm. like city lights and stuff like that. But I think it's just trying to show how big and massive this place is for just tiny little Jane to be mm-hmm. trying to do some good in this world, in this big apple that she can't navigate by herself, and she's really trying, and she's doing a good job. She's just, like, she doesn't have the support she needs, and the support she needs is just on the phone twice in the movie, you know, mm-hmm. and not even really a support system. So what I hope for Jane is that she and new gal pal, whatever her name is, they join together and they just become, like, a support system for each other, because they need each other. Women need women.
Yeah, I love that. And I had the same kind of feeling with the ending, that just that ending shot of she, like, walks off into the city alone. And again, it's just like, she's one tiny speck in this big, trying to fight against this big system, like the system of abuse, in which every person that finds out and then does nothing is not only complicit, but they're then benefiting from this abuse. And it's like, how do you fight this? Like, this is, you know, decades in the making that this is even possible for mm-hmm. him to abuse his power in this way. So I think it does a good job in such an understated, like, subtle way of kind of really showing the context of, like, how big of a problem this really is. So it sounds like you recommend this movie.
I do recommend it.
I also recommend this movie. Sure. That is The Assistant from Kitty Green, recommended by both of us. Thank you so much, Sophie, for joining us today.
Of course. And thank you for having me.
Yes, it's been a pleasure. And I would love to have you back again in the future.
Just let me know.
I will. And that will do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening to Art House Garage. We've got a few years worth now of episodes. You can hear all of those in your podcast app of choice. If you want to support Art House Garage, you can leave a rating or a review in your podcast app, or you can buy an Art House Garage t-shirt at arthousegarage.com/shop. Stay in the loop about Art House Garage and the Arkansas film community by subscribing to our email newsletter by going to arthousegarage.com/subscribe. Or you can email me directly, andrew@arthousegarage.com. And of course, follow on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. Just search @arthousegarage in all those places, or find links in the show notes. Thank you again so much for listening, and until next time, keep it snob free.